Welcome back to First Bite, the Pride of Detroit preview podcast, where we give you a preview of the Detroit Lions' next game in a nice bite-sized 30-minute or so episode. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the replacement adequate host. We unfortunately had to let Chris go after his rant last week, and unfortunately, this is how he's going to find out about it. Just kidding, Chris. You're okay. I'm going to be hosting again this week as he's off doing some USC stuff. We love you, Chris. I'm just joking. With me, as always, is the I was going to say adequate co-host, but that's not what you are. You're more than adequate, Ryan. Ryan Matthews is here with us. How are you doing today, Ryan?
That was a wonderful introduction. I'm more than adequate.
You are.
We're just a bunch of winners over here.
And like always, we like to have a guest from the opposing side of the field. And with us today is Bob Rose. He is a contributor over at Canal Street Chronicles, the SB Nation site for the New Orleans Saints. Bob, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm good, gentlemen, and thank you for having me on. I guess since I'm representing the opposition, I'm less than adequate, huh?
I wasn't going to say that, but
your words, not ours.
I'm not going to contend you on that. We'll see what we think by the end of the episode. Maybe you can reach somewhere above adequacy. We'll see. But we like to get these things started by first talking about the injury report. The injury report is literally hot off the presses. We're recording this Wednesday night, and they just released them for both teams a couple hours ago. On the Lions side of the ball, the news is pretty much all about Matthew Stafford. He was surprisingly a completely full participant today with that ankle injury. And also kind of surprising that it was only the ankle injury. We had seen him get his thigh wrapped during the game on Sunday, but it apparently is not too limiting, and I guess neither is the ankle. Everything else is kind of the same as it's been, although Kenny Galladay and Dwayne Washington returned in a limited fashion. There's a chance they could play this week after both have missed the past couple games. But there are some interesting things happening on the Saints side of the ball. And I think first and foremost, if you wouldn't mind talking about it, Rob, Terron Armstead, he returned to practice today. I know he's practiced a couple times, but he's dealing with a torn labrum, or he had a torn labrum, same injury that our own Taylor Decker suffered. Do you have any inclination whether he's going to be playing the Saints starting left tackle?
Actually, we're hearing that there's a good chance that Armstead is going to play. You know, Sean Payton typically plays these injury things very close to the vest, even for an NFL coach. But like you had pointed out, Terron was practicing for a couple of weeks, even leading into the bye week. And as soon as he had the surgery on his labrum early into the offseason, his recovery all along, every step of the way, has been ahead of schedule, all reports were. I'll be interested to see myself whether he starts or not. But him back to full health is a big, big, big addition to the Saints offensive line.
And that's so unfortunate to hear for Lions fans, because Terron Armstead is one of the best tackles in the NFL. He's going to make things much more difficult should he play and should he be at full health for a guy like Ezekiel Ansah, who's really struggling for the Lions at this point. But also what might be a little bit just perplexing, I don't know if Terron Armstead is some kind of superhuman. I understand that there's varying degrees maybe of labrum tears, but our own left tackle, Taylor Decker, is kind of dealing with a similar injury. And his injury even happened earlier in the offseason than Terron Armstead. So it's interesting to hear that his road to recovery is a little bit more accelerated than Taylor Decker's. But what about Willie Snead coming back for the Saints too? He was also limited with a hamstring. Does he seem like he's going to be a go this week?
Yeah, he does. Again, it's hard to tell how much action he is actually going to see, because this is going to be his first regular season game back. He had sat out the first three games due to a league suspension for some off the field activities in the off season. He was supposed to be back for the Dolphins game, and then they scratched him with a hamstring. Hamstrings, as we all know, can be very tricky, especially for a skill position like wide receiver. But Snead back to full health is certainly a big boost to the Saints wide receiver core. I kind of expect it to, as far as how much action he does see. You see how like Friday's practice goes and even pregame warmups. I expect to see him on the field. They won't scratch him like they did against Miami. But you don't want to worsen a hamstring injury for a wide receiver because he'd miss significant time after that.
It's like looking in a mirror, isn't it, Jeremy?
It is in a way. But one thing I want to point out here is how good the Saints offense has been without these two guys. I believe it's been the rookie, Ryan Ramczyk, playing left tackle. Is that correct? In Armstead's place?
Ramczyk did start out at left tackle in place of Armstead. And especially for a rookie left tackle, that's a very difficult position to play. And he was pretty impressive. They faced some nice pass rushers in the first few weeks of the season. And he had some lapses, but he more than held his own. Then when right tackle Zach Strief went down and what ended up being probably a season-ending injury, they flipped Ramczyk over to the right side and then moved Andres Peak from left guard to left tackle. And, you know, Ramczyk was even more impressive at right tackle. It took for a rookie to flop back and forth across the line like that. That's a lot to ask, and he's holding his own. When Armstead does get back to full health, whether it's this week or in the upcoming weeks, Ramczyk is your definite starter at right tackle. Matter of fact, even if Armstead doesn't start this game, I expect to see Pete start in his place at left tackle, and Ramczyk will be the right tackle for the remainder of the season, barring anything goofy.
And what about the replacements for Willie Snead? I mean, obviously, I think some people thought that receiver might be a bit of a weak point for the Saints after, you know, they traded one of their best receivers to the Patriots this offseason. Who has stepped up in the first four games for the Saints in Willie Snead's absence?
Oddly, it's not necessarily a single wide receiver. Drew Brees has always traditionally spread the ball around, and he continues to do so. But the rookie third-round pick at running back, Alvin Kamara, has assumed a lot of those shorter and intermediate pass-catching roles. Free agent pickup last year, Kobe Fleener at tight end, is playing a lot better, thankfully for Saints fans, than what he did in 2016. So those two guys have really taken the mantle. As far as the complementary wide receivers, they did sign Ted Ginn this offseason to provide a deep threat. He's been a little bit inconsistent at that, but that's kind of the mantra of Teddy's career. He's a boom or bust player, always a threat to take the top off of the defense, so that'll be challenging for the Detroit secondary. Brandon Coleman, big wide receiver, is earning Drew Brees' trust in the intermediate routes and especially around the end zone. But it's definitely been a group effort. Still, this team is a lot better with Snead on the field than off.
And throughout this week, we've kind of already mentioned some new additions, and I kind of want to get into that, into how different the Saints team is from the team that the Lions saw last year, because it was kind of a rare performance from the Lions defense in that game. They held the Saints, held Drew Brees to no interceptions for the first time in like 20 years in New Orleans that game, picked him off three times. You mentioned Alvin Kamara. We mentioned Ryan Ramczyk, but this team had a lot of draft picks this offseason. Can you kind of go through maybe some, not necessarily just the rookies, maybe some free agent pickups as well, but this is a very different Saints team than it was a year ago. Am I correct?
Yeah, it really is. Probably the biggest free agent signing for the Saints, especially on the offensive side, has been a name familiar to you guys, and that's Larry Warford. When they brought him in, he's going to be their starter at right guard, and he's really going to be a staple going forward for the interior of the Saints line. One of the best guards in the NFL, I think, and I loved the signing when they first inked him. He was on my free agency shortlist as soon as the offseason started. And Brees especially, he's not a very tall quarterback, so he needs better interior line protection than he does at tackles. If that's possible, he likes to step up. Being a shorter guy, listed generously at 6 feet, 6'1" range, he needs to have those passing lanes clear. And Warford is a great guy to do that. Between him, Max Unger at center, and Pete, once he moves back to his natural position at left guard, They're road graders too. The three of those guys are what I've nicknamed phone booth maulers. And once they're once they get a little bit more familiar playing with each other, because this line, just like we talked about, has been shuffled quite a bit over these first four games. Once the line stabilizes and they get more familiar, the running game is going to improve too. So Warford is probably the biggest free agent signing. We already touched on Teddy Ginn, definitely a big play threat. Kamara is a great addition at rookie, and he is still working his way into a bigger and bigger role in Sean Payton's offensive game plan. We all kind of, you know, grinned as soon as the pick was made in the spring, as soon as they drafted Kamara. Well, you know, Coach Payton has a new toy, and he's still figuring out how to use him. This guy is an extremely dangerous weapon, and he's only going to get better. The loss of Brandon Cooks was big because the guy was coming off of two straight 1,000-yard seasons. But like we talked about, it's been a group effort to replace him. Michael Thomas has been key, though. The guy had a great rookie year last year, 92 catches over 1,000 yards, and was really the team's primary receiver by the end of the regular season. He seems on the verge of stepping into close to elite wide receivers in the NFL, and I know that's a big step, but you know, even with Snead absent and a little bit of offensive line struggles, teams have been bracketing and really gearing their coverages around Thomas, and he continues to produce. He's going to be a big weapon for these guys moving forward on the offensive side. They've struggled a little bit in recent weeks, you know, putting points on the board consistently, even though they put 34 up on Carolina. But between the injuries and the absences, this team for the first four games has really only been playing, has kind of been playing with one arm tied behind their back. They're starting to get their full complement of offensive weapons and offensive line cohesion together. So on paper, it looks like that this team's going to be very dangerous again offensively moving forward.
Well, we've talked a lot about offense already, and I don't know if that's strategic on your efforts or not, but let's move over to the defense, because that's obviously the place where I think the Saints had obviously more room to grow from last year. And they did kind of go defense. I mean, they had a good mixture of offense and defense in their draft, but they did add some key defensive pieces. Marshawn Lattimore in the first round. Unfortunately, I know Alex Anzalone is now on injured reserve, but talk about some of the changes on defense and what your outlook is on them right now.
I love this defense. I'll be honest with you. And it's not just because of the last two games. Towards the end of last season, four out of the last 5 years, the Saints have been not near the bottom, but at the bottom of nearly every defensive ranking. But you started to see some glimmers of hope towards the end of last year. They were still giving up some yards, but there were, you know, there were games where they started to solidify, and that was with a lot of holes and a lot of injuries at cornerback and in the secondary last year. And like you said, Lattimore falling to the team with the 11th pick. The guy was projected by some to go in the top five, by nearly everybody to go in the top 10. He looks like a true shutdown guy. And you guys have a great cornerback over there and Darius Slay. And you know firsthand how much one key guy can make a difference for an entire defense when you're talking about being able to be a difference maker on the one side of the field. So Lattimore is very exciting. An underrated pick for them defensively was in the second round. They grabbed free safety Marcus Williams out of Utah. Williams is a classic center field guy, something that the team has been lacking big time on defense. They've had some athletes at safety, but never a guy that was able to sit back and be able to accurately read an offense and have the athletic ability to make a play on it. Now, the guy's still a rookie, so it's high expectations, but he's getting better every week.
He already has a pick, right? He already has an interception on the air?
Yeah. He had a pick against Cam Newton and the Panthers, and he's been really close to other ones. He struggled, much like the entire defense, in the first 2 weeks, mainly with reads. Because yeah, as you watch those games, and in years past, you'd say, well, the Saints just aren't good enough physically on defense, and you can't I don't necessarily think that anymore. I think athletically they match up a lot better with many of the opponents on their schedule. But the team is so young that it's going to take some time to get together. Seeing them on the field, playing together, you know, things like that. Alex Anzalone's injury at linebacker was a huge loss because he's probably the most athletic linebacker that they have. But they brought in A.J. Klein from Carolina, who's been a big addition. He's rounding into a defensive leader to go along with Cam Jordan on the defensive line. Always solid, and they have a few younger defensive line pieces as well. This team is going to probably be inconsistent during the course of the season. So I know we talked just before we went on the air, you know, which team do you think this is, especially defensively? The short answer is I don't know. I don't think they're as bad as what they showed against Minnesota and New England, but it's hard to believe that they're yet quite this good as what they showed against shutting out Miami and shutting down Carolina. But like you said, there are a lot of exciting young pieces. I'm looking forward to seeing where this defense goes from here.
And not to go on kind of a somber note here, but there's another former Lion that was a part of the Saints plans, I'm assuming, coming into this year. He had a real nice year last year, but it was Nick Fairley. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what the Saints lost along the interior of their defensive line real quick? I know the Saints have historically, like within the past few years, it's really been the secondary that's kind of been their shortcoming. Has their defensive line been doing enough to help out that secondary?
No, not so far. The defensive line has not been doing enough. Cam Jordan is always going to be a solid, solid defender, very versatile against the run and as a pass rusher. But losing Nick Fairley was huge. And we all knew it, I think, but we didn't necessarily want to acknowledge it. Because first of all, like you said, it's on a very somber note because it's bad enough when one of your guys go down with injury. But this is a lot more serious than that. You know, this is Nick has a heart problem.
This is a livelihood thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're talking about life or death potentially. Obviously, at worst case scenario. So we certainly wish Big Nick a return to health, even if it doesn't mean a return to the football field. But as a football player, he brought a lot to this defensive line last year. You guys know the athletic ability and the physical traits that he brought brings to the field by seeing him in Detroit. But he started to pair with Cam as a leader on the defensive line too. Always a very emotional player. But once he got that into check and kind of eliminated the peaks and valleys, which has really kind of haunted him his whole career, caused him some inconsistencies. Once he learned to start getting his emotions under control, he was, in my opinion, he was the Saints' best defender down the stretch last year. So it's certainly a big loss. It thinned out the interior defensive line, and they really haven't been able to get that push up the middle against the quarterbacks. And that caused some big problems in the first two games because the quarterbacks had all day to step up and throw. And I'll be interested to see. I mean, you guys talked about Matthew Stafford probably is going to play, but he might be a little bit hobbled. Interior pressure is the key to get to a quarterback that isn't going to have a whole lot of mobility. So that's one of the areas that the Saints defense has been the most inconsistent.
Well, on that optimistic note for the Lions, let's go to a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about matchups, a little more about the Saints kind of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde performance over the first four games, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit about a running back that's no longer on the Saints roster. All that and more when we come back. All right, we're back here on the First Bite podcast with Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, previewing the Lions and the Saints Week 6 matchup. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the defense here and kind of go back through the Saints' schedule so far. You know, they started 0-2 with two really, really poor performances on the defense. You know, they gave up 143 passer rating to the Vikings and Sam Bradford in Week 1, followed up, like most teams do against the Patriots. Let him let Tom Brady throw for over 400 yards, nearly 140 passer rating. And then the next 2 weeks, we just saw what the Panthers offense is capable of. The Saints hold them to 156 total passing yards and a 35.4 passer rating. And then I don't know how much you can draw from a game in London, especially when you're opposing Jay Cutler, but they hold him to 128 yards, a 71.1 passer rating, or probably around that team's average so far. So I know this is a tough question this early in the season, and I kind of asked the same thing last week to the Panthers guy, but is this Saints defense for real? Give me a sense of where you think the Saints defense really lies, because as much as I'm hopeful in general, like I'm kind of a fan of the Saints, that they're an okay team for me, and I want to see them succeed outside of this week. And so I want to think that their defense is a little bit improved, but I can't get myself to believe that yet, considering how bad it's been over the past, like you said, 3 or 4 years.
I wish I could answer that that question accurately. It's something we're all searching for. We have said for the last 5 or so years, you give Drew Brees in this offense even a middle of the pack defense, and they're a Super Bowl contender.
That sounds very familiar, right?
But yeah, you know, a lot of people remember how good these Saints teams were, how successful these Saints teams were in 2009 and 2011. Well, if you look back, of course they had one of the league's elite offenses, but their defensive rankings were only around middle of the pack. Now, what they did do is they caused a lot of turnovers, especially in 2009. And that, above all else, is something that this defense is not doing and has not been doing. I mentioned I love some of the young pieces that the Saints have on defense. Specifically, I like their secondary a lot. But any secondary, if you don't pressure the passer, I don't care how many terrific players or potentially very good players you have in the secondary, you're going to give up plays, you're going to give up passing yards, and you're going to give up touchdowns. That's what we saw in the first 2 weeks. I kind of think of it in the way that you think of it as far as Miami and Cutler. It is Jay Cutler. You almost have to put an asterisk on that game. But the thing to remember is, you know, the Dolphins still had three very talented wide receivers, and the secondary did limit them. The next 2 weeks, everybody that covers the Saints and, you know, is a fan of them, we have been looking at these next two games for New Orleans, you know, against Stafford and against Aaron Rodgers next week. That is going to be, I think, the really true test at how far this defense has come. Are they a top five or even a top 10 unit? I really don't think so at this point. I like the secondary and the players that they have. The linebacking core and the lack of athletes there, pure athletes and depth, that still worries me. We saw it, you know, Detroit and Stafford has taken advantage of that before, with patterns to Eric Ebron, and especially Theo Riddick has eaten them alive, as well as Golden Tate. And it's not so much the secondary play, although they've struggled there. It's the linebackers. I mean, they aren't making plays on those intermediate routes, and they're putting even more pressure on a secondary that is already left a little bit hung out to dry because they cannot get consistent pressure on the quarterback. So, you know, that's kind of where we lie. I think ultimately, if the team stays healthy with the remaining pieces that they have, by the end of the year, they might be hovering around the top 15 unit. With the future looking bright. I know I'm a little bit optimistic given their current rankings, but that's kind of what I see out of this defense.
Well, it's interesting you bring up some of the matchup things, and let's kind of move into that segment of our podcast here to talk a little bit about matchups. You mentioned that the Saints linebackers might be a little vulnerable, which is obviously pretty good news for a short yardage passing team like the Lions that can, like you mentioned, spring a guy like Theo Riddick, who I still remember the move that he put on one of your, I think it was a linebacker, maybe it was a safety last year. Additionally, maybe this is a game that Eric Ebron finally gets going. He certainly has the motivation to do so since the entire Lions fan base wants him out right now.
Literally, pretty much everyone.
Is there a matchup you see on your end that maybe favors the Saints on Sunday?
I definitely think that New Orleans will be able to control Detroit's running game. I'm not revealing any magical news when I tell you guys that the Lions look like they have struggled running the football. Then they, if they can indeed control the running game, and in New Orleans, we've gone into games thinking that in the past. Oh, you know, we can control the running game, and even though we struggle on pass defense, if we make them one-dimensional, we'll at least have the opportunity to make turnovers. Well, you know, that hadn't proven to be true. All of a sudden, the Saints' run defense, which we thought might have been making some progress, falls flat on their face at inopportune times. So with this defense for the last number of years now, it's one step forward and two steps back. But I do think that they'll be able to control Detroit's running game. That's the number one matchup that I think favors them. They've struggled. Detroit has seemed to struggle protecting Stafford even more so than usual. Yeah. He's been sacked, I think, 18 times on the year so far. And I realize that a bulk of them came against Carolina, you know, and they have one of the better pass rushing units in the NFL. But I think I believe that New Orleans will be able to get to Stafford. Dennis Allen, the Saints defensive coordinator, has always been a blitz heavy guy. And they're starting with each passing week, this defense is starting to get to the quarterback a little bit more. And if they could put pressure on Stafford, I think that they could force him into mistakes. Cause we just got done talking about the young playmakers in the Saints secondary. So I personally think that they'll be able to put some pressure on Stafford, especially if they can control the running game and make the Lions a little bit more one-dimensional.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Saints, you know, starting to get a little pressure. They've got 11 sacks through four games, which is a pretty good rate. It actually, even though they've played one fewer game than almost every other team, they're still kind of in the middle of the pack in sacks, and I think Cameron Jordan is obviously the guy that you need to keep an eye on. Now, Is he the kind of guy that moves around on the left, on the right? Does he stick to one side during the game? How do they like to use Cameron Jordan? Because if I'm not mistaken, he's clearly the best guy in that defensive front.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's the best guy on the defensive front. They'll move him around a little bit, especially in clear-cut passing situations. They like to go to a NASCAR package and put basically all athletes and pass rushers on the field. It's not unusual to see Jordan move inside then. He's not the biggest defensive end in the world, but he does have good strength and definitely good speed and quickness. So he's capable of playing inside on something like a NASCAR package. Other than that, they don't do a lot of flip-flopping him from side to side. What they have done, I have noticed, especially since Allen has become the defensive coordinator, which was last year with his first full season, they do like to isolate Jordan on the one side, and if he does blitz heavy, it's either going to be up the middle or on the side opposite Jordan, which makes a lot of sense because if the line in the protection package moves to safeguard against the blitz, that's more likely to leave Cam in one-on-one in a one-on-one pass rushing situation, which is, of course, where you want your best pass rusher to be.
All right. Well, I think we've avoided the topic long enough, but the biggest news to come out of the Saints this week was trading of Adrian Peterson. And as a Lions fan, I had mixed emotions about it. On one hand, it's nice not to have to play that guy for a year, but on the other hand, I think we can both agree that this guy was well past his prime. How do you view everything that went down with the Saints? Were you a fan when they first signed him to that 2-year deal? Are you okay with trading him for, you know, a conditional sixth? Was this all just like a terrible mess that you wish the Saints would have avoided? But what's your point of view? What's the Saints' point of view of what happened?
Did he actually quote unquote look like the Adrian Peterson of old, as early training camp reports pointed out?
No, he looked like an old Adrian Peterson. I didn't like the signing from the start. For two reasons. Number one, he does not fit in a Sean Payton, Drew Brees type of offense. It's a poor fit. Now, you're still talking about a surefire Hall of Fame running back, which if he was still in his prime, he was the kind of talented back. He would have fit in and made plays anywhere. The problem was he wasn't that guy anymore. and please correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I didn't see an impressive Adrian Peterson for the last 2 years, really. And I know he was nicked up with injury and missed most of the 1 year, but when he was on the field the last 2 years in Minnesota, I just didn't see the same guy. It looked like his legs were finally going. Yeah, he had some productive games, but you can no longer count on that. I wasn't seeing things then.
No,
that's what I was, because I was telling everybody that would listen to me anyway, that look, I don't think the guy has anything left. Shade, and I'm showing my age a little bit when I drop these names. Shades of Franco Harris in Seattle, and Tony Dorsett in Denver. And then more recent time, veteran James and Emmett Smith in, ironically, Arizona, where Peterson got traded to. You know, those guys, all great backs, and just they reached a point. Even New Orleans fans thought when they got Earl Campbell in the early 80s. And that's the situation that I compared Peterson to. And as the preseason camps went on, and especially in preseason games, you didn't see much action from Peterson in the preseason. Now, that's not unusual. I realize, you know, especially New Orleans, Breeze hardly played at all. So it's not unusual for your star players and or your starters to get little or no action. But I was asking the question, you know, we weren't seeing them even really in a whole lot of team scrimmages that they would have. And I was wondering if the Saints coaches had already realized once they got him there, this guy doesn't have anything left. Now, that's something only they can answer, and it's something that's certainly up to conjecture and opinion. But once the regular season game started, even again, that first game against Minnesota, you would figure AP would be fired up to go home, play his former team, and I'm sure he was, but the body just wasn't responding to what the mind and the heart wanted him to do anymore. As far as the sideline blow-up that took place, that's just between two competitors. I wasn't worried about that. But as the weeks went on, Kamara became a bigger part of the Saints' offense, like we'd mentioned earlier. So that would lessen snaps for one of the running backs. And Ingram just took control of the job. He's a better fit for the Peyton offense. Whenever Adrian Peterson was in the game, anybody watching knew what they were going to do. They weren't going to throw him the ball. If they were going to pass at all, they were going to have to get rid of the ball quickly because Peterson can't pass protect. They were going to run the ball. So teams would stack the box, and Peterson can no longer beat that kind of defense. Now, admittedly, the Saints' offensive line struggles has hurt them more in the running game than in pass protection, and that certainly didn't do Peterson any favors. But the guy was only averaging 3 yards a carry. On 27 carries. So, I mean, in my opinion, that's certainly enough opportunity to show whether you have any pop left in your legs or not. His longest run was 11 yards. And if you take that 11-yard run out, he's averaging less than 2.5 yards a carry. Yes. That's not just not a Hall of Fame running back. That's not even a productive running back in any kind of system.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I expected the team to release him before the end of the month. So the fact that the Saints got a sixth-round pick out of him, I think, is a win-win. Luckily, they signed him to a fairly team-friendly contract, so they're not on the hook for a whole lot of dead cap money or anything like that. So when you look at the contract itself, I guess it was worth the risk. It was a low-risk, high-reward situation to bring him in, and it, you know, they're 2-2 sitting at the break. I don't think Peterson's existence would have made or non-existence would have made a whole lot of difference in any of those four games. So at this point, moving forward, it's no harm, no foul.
All right. Well, I think it's time now that we've gotten that out of the way to move on to our prediction time. The way we usually do this is we do the one thing we think we know about this matchup. And so I'll give you a little bit of time to think about it, Bob. And why don't we start with Ryan, like we always seem to do. Ryan, what is the one thing you think you know about this Lions-Saints matchup for Sunday?
So from the get-go, just from having this wonderful conversation we've had so far tonight, I'm fairly certain that I think I know this game will not resemble the game that the Lions had last year when they were riding high on the hopes of an NFC North title. They were 8-4 going out. That was the game last year where the Lions looked like the most complete team. They really set a precedent there that they never really lived up to afterwards. And I know the Stafford finger injury was kind of the one thing that kind of unpinned all of the magic that was of last season. But I think I know for certain that these two teams are very different. And I think that they're different in ways that doesn't really bode well for the Lions coming into this week. And I don't mean to put a poo-poo on it, but I'm really thinking that, you know, the talk of these NASCAR fronts that the Saints defense runs, you know, on passing down situations, that was a lot of the stuff that we saw the Lions struggle with last week against Carolina, when Carolina decided to go like one single high safety and just load up the front and send the house at Stafford and say, okay, if you're going to beat us, hopefully one of your wideouts gets separation and you have enough time to blink and throw. So I think I know that this offensive line for the Lions is going to struggle against that defensive front for the Saints. And it's going to be the second week in a row. And it's really going to be up to Jim Bob Cooter and the offense to fix some things and to put some different things in place that allow Stafford to get the ball away quicker, because if not, it's going to be a very long day for number nine.
Oof. Well, now that Ryan has depressed all of our listeners, Bob, why don't you give us the one thing you know, and hopefully it'll be optimistic for the Lions.
Yeah, the Saints guy. Hey, give us something. Give us some fodder for Lions fans.
Well, Lions fans can take solace in the fact that Golden Tate over the last three games against New Orleans has absolutely eaten them alive.
I'll take
and,
that.
I mean, something to the tune of 350 yards receiving, four touchdowns. I mean, the Saints have not been able to match up with Golden Tate. We talked a little bit earlier about last year's matchup. They couldn't match up with Theo Riddick either. One thing that I will say that I think I know is that the Saints' coverage on Tate is going to be a lot tighter this time. He might get his catches, but I don't think he's going to run free in the secondary and make a whole lot of big plays. I expect this game to be a defensive struggle. And I know Lions have struggled off and on defensively, and we've talked about how the Saints have struggled off and on defensively. But both of these teams have offensive red flags right now. Detroit has struggled to protect Matthew Stafford, and I completely agree with you, Ryan. I think the Saints are really going to get after him, pressure him, and we're going to see him hit the ground a couple times. But the Detroit secondary matches up well with the New Orleans wide receivers. They shut them down last year, and that was with Brandon Cooks. So I will be very interested to see how New Orleans responds to that this time around. So another thing that I think I know is that the winner of this game will not score 30 points. I expect a final score somewhere in the range of 24-21, 27-21, you know, something like that. Neither team has turned the ball over very much. In fact, the Saints haven't turned it over at all. Both teams are going to have at least two turnovers this game. I'll predict that as well.
Oh, you just threw, I think, three things you think you know. I like it. I'll throw in my one thing, and it kind of goes against what you just said, but not necessarily. I think I know that both quarterbacks are going to throw for 300 yards. Last matchup, that was true. The two quarterbacks combined for about 660 yards and in 86 pass attempts. I think both teams are going to have to air it out again to get any sort of movement on offense. I think both teams are going to struggle to run the ball on Sunday. So it's going to rely a lot on both quarterbacks. And since the New Orleans pass rush isn't quite as good as the Lions have seen, especially over the past 2 weeks when the Lions have suffered 12 sacks, I think that'll give Stafford some opportunity to air it out. And he's going to need it too, because he's probably not going to be as mobile as he usually is with that ankle injury bothering him. So I think I know that both teams are going to throw for at least 300 yards this week. So that's it for our predictions. We like to close this out by giving you an opportunity, Bob, to all, like all of our guests, to plug any of their stuff. If you have a Twitter account, if you have a weekly column, if you have something that maybe Lions fans would be interested in reading coming at Canal Street Chronicles, fire away. This is your moment.
Oh, I appreciate that. And Jeremy Ryan, thank you so much again for having me on the show. It's been an honor and a privilege. Hopefully I've neared adequate status.
I think so. I think so.
You've surpassed it. You surpassed it, my friend.
But anybody that wants to follow my work, I do work for the Canal Street Chronicles. Canal Street Chronicles has a page on Facebook and can be followed on Twitter as well, at SaintsCSC. My own individual work can be followed not only through Canal Street Chronicles, but my own Twitter account, at BobbyR2613. As we near the end of the week, I'm going to do offensive and defensive matchups between the Saints and the Lions. I try to hit on that every week. And I'm also trying to do a series history of all of the Saints opponents, like quick records, a couple odd statistical tidbits, and a couple historical matchups between the two franchises. For example, Saints and Lions, the 1970 game where Tom Dempsey ended it with that long record-breaking field goal, the playoff game between the two a couple years ago, and like I said, some unusual statistical oddities, fun facts kind of thing. And I usually come out with that series history either Friday or Saturday. So look forward to doing that as well.
Yeah, and we will keep our eyes out on that. Again, that's Canal Street Chronicles. Thanks again, Bob Rose, for joining us. We appreciate it. I'm glad that I actually got the recorder working this time, so we only had to do this once. Good luck on Sunday, and we appreciate you sticking around.
Thanks, guys. Take care.